For almost 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has pointed the way towards salvation through Jesus Christ. For each of us, that journey starts in darkness, as in a cave. We invite you now to join us as we seek wisdom and truth by way of faith and reason with your guides, Mark Tuttle, Timothy O'Donnell, and Joseph Tomasian. Join us in the Catholic Cave. Welcome once again to the Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford. In the cave with me to begin today's show is Mr. Mark Tuttle and Joseph Tomasian. Gentlemen, in the cave, one of the terms that comes up most frequently is metaphysics. And metaphysics, you know, you guys mentioned earlier when we were chatting off the air that if you go into a bookstore, you'll find an entire section on metaphysics. But it's probably not in the way that we refer to it here in the Catholic cave.
No, not at all.
So, to us, what is metaphysics, and is it still relevant in today's world?
Yeah, you know, you say we mention it a lot, and that's possibly true. But the fact is, in philosophy in general, metaphysics is getting mentioned less and less and less. And, you know, honestly, at the academic level, metaphysics has kind of a bad name to it.
Not just a bad name, but it's looked down upon as not being relevant even. So it's not just frowned upon, but just not relevant.
Not relevant and to a certain extent, errant.
Yeah.
You know, that it doesn't accurately describe the reality that we encounter. And you know,
and from a modernist perspective, there's some legitimacy in that because it can seem as if metaphysics is entirely arbitrary based upon the philosopher doing the metaphysicking.
Yep. And yet I was teaching the Summa, and the first five books of the Summa. So the very beginning, of course, he starts talking about whether there's a need for a divine science of theology. But then right after that, he jumps directly into a metaphysical discussion around the existence of God. And it's like the page two of the Summa, we're talking about metaphysics. It was that central to philosophy for so long. So the, you know, the big question is kind of, A, what happened, and was that progress? I mean, did we philosophically progress away from metaphysics, or has that left a big hole in our understanding?
Before we jump into the grad school conversation around it, let's start with the primary school. Metaphysics means beyond the physical, beyond physics, beyond what can be seen. So can you give me a definition or at least a working conversation piece about what metaphysics actually is?
Right. And I think even prior to defining metaphysics, we'll have to go back and kind of look at the word physics a little bit.
Sure.
Phusis, because, you know, metaphysics is a Greek word and phusis is simply motion. So, you know, or change.
Right.
And so, you know, honestly, those are those things that are sort of responsible and beyond within change. So I think if you look at the universe, obviously things change. And to account for that change, to kind of figure out why things change, metaphysics is sort of the study of what do we have to understand is there almost prior logically before we can understand how things are changing, how things are moving, the way things are composed, etc.
So if we were to jump into an ancient understanding of the motion of the bodies in the universe in our solar system, the ancients would see these planets and stars. Some would move, some would not. So how would you say that metaphysics then would be? So physics would be the understanding of, or at least looking at the planets and stars, but the metaphysics are, well, how do they move? Is that?
I think it's more why they move.
Okay, so is it like something that exists in the ether that moves these things physically, or
no? Okay. I think it is more explanatory factors that are almost behind the scenes. Okay. Yeah, they're sort of hidden from view. So they're not necessarily part of physical reality, but they are real things nonetheless. So causes.
Okay.
And also the composition of things. You know, if you want to understand how things change, you know, if you want to understand how a log ignites and becomes hot and becomes fire, you have to have an understanding a little bit of, I guess, what the nature of that log is. So you have to have things like, okay, what is the sort of form of the log? What is its matter? What's its material substance? And so as you start to,
which is wood,
but what's the tendency of wood? And I think that's the underlying question. Why does the tendency of wood tend towards fire? And so, and not only that, but to understand anything about wood, you do have to understand that it does tend towards burning. So it's got that tendency to it. So you've got its composition, you got its form, you've got what it sort of tends towards. And then also things change because there's purposes to them.
Sure.
And you know, you have to talk yourself out of nature having purposes. I mean, we moderns try to strip our understanding of the universe from some sort of purposeful understanding. But yet when it comes to like physiology, like right. parts of the body, we still talk about the parts of the body of having purposes, right?
Sure,
The purpose of the heart is to pump blood. The purpose of the kidney is to cleanse the blood. I mean, we talk in terms of purposes, even though when we step back, we try to talk ourselves out of that and say, well, you know, these things kind of just sort of evolved, so they don't really have those purposes. They just sort of fit together within a system, and within that system, it's, you know, how it developed was somewhat
random evolution
or trial and error to kind of wind up
in, sure.
in, but you know, but nonetheless, we can't go about our everyday life without recognizing that there's certain purposes to even the natural objects that we encounter.
So let's back up again to the composition of the log. And so if you were to look at just a stack of wood, you can see that it's going to be brown. It's going to be dry. It might have a grayish tinge to it where it's been sitting outside and weathering. You open it up and it's wood and there's bark on the outside. You put it in the fire. Or you put it, you stack it in a pile, you strike a match, you put the match to it, it burns, okay? And then that composition changes from wood to ash. So when we are talking about what it means to be a log, we're talking about something abstract. So we deduce the certain qualities of that log, the accidents of it, as it were, and say that these accidents are attributes that we place on it, and it sort of constitutes the being of the log itself.
Right, because what appears to us, the brown round object, is really just the tip of the iceberg when
right.
it comes to what that log is, because that log could become a house, it could become a fire, it could become ash.
So it has potential to become other things. Potency.
Right, exactly. Okay. And then when you actually do cut it and you turn it into timber, now it has been actualized into a 2x4.
Sure.
Or something that you can use to build a house. So it the log, as you find it in the forest or cut it off the tree or wherever you get logs, it has the potential to become many things, but then what it actually is, it is put into actualization. And it's not just logs. Everything's that way. You know, baby sheep, they aren't adult sheep yet. They have the potential to become adult sheep.
But they're only ever going to become adult sheep or, you know.
Or possibly. I mean, the fact of the matter
or
is...
Or end up in my pasta.
Or they might get eaten by a wolf. And in right. which case, they were never actualized. So they never became actual full-grown sheep.
But that still doesn't change the nature of their being, and so they're fundamentally sheep. And so when we talk about being, we're talking about the basic fundamental realities that exist philosophically about the nature of a thing, right? Which is why metaphysics is called first philosophy.
Right, right. It is, and it's first philosophy because it is logically... what comes before everything else.
So right? You have to define a thing before you can talk about it.
Well, not only do you have to, not only temporarily, but even in the case of talking about it, mm-hmm. you have to presuppose all sorts of metaphysical information about it, even if you don't want to talk about the metaphysics of it. So that's always in the background to a certain extent.
And so this a priori presupposition of the nature of things is largely what's being removed, at least in a modern sense. I don't want to get too far forward in the conversation, but it seems to me that metaphysics constantly has this a priori presupposition of the nature of a thing. I'd say that's classically what metaphysics is.
Right, right. And you know, even though it's looked down upon and even though it's shunned, you know, I had one professor that says, everybody does metaphysics. Everybody does. They may not realize it. And the big question is whether they understand metaphysics well
or
they understand metaphysics badly.
Sure.
And that's really kind of the central question.
So if we were to give another example and I think it's going to both clarify and help push the conversation forward. When we look at human beings, because, you know, being egocentric, we tend to view things through strictly the lens of what it means to be us. What is the nature of a human being, and how does that help to sort of elucidate the definition of metaphysics?
That's a great question. I think human beings are probably one of the hardest things to define. Obviously we are rational animals. You know, that's Aristotle's definition. We are rational, which means we have the potential, the potency, the ability to contemplate. And that really is sort of our highest calling, is to contemplate, to understand, to grasp. So, on the other hand, we are the animals that have the ability to manipulate the environment.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that falls into the definition of human beings, that we are the animals that are able to make things, to create things. So we are the creative animals as well, but we are animals. And so that's part of the metaphysical definition of people, are all of those aspects that go into being an animal. But even that, you know, even that's getting a little bit, I think, more into the realm of physics and less into metaphysics.
So in it being an individuated substance of a rational nature, an individuated substance, body, rational nature, mind, nous, soul?
Yeah. And you know, I think when you look at it metaphysically, everything has at least some sort of cognate with a soul, right? So, so even inanimate objects, they have a form to them. They have something that sort of defines their outer limits of what they can become.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's really philosophically, metaphysically, what a soul is, even though we Catholics have a more spiritual definition of soul.
And we'll pick up with that right after we take a break. We'll be joined by Timothy O'Donnell, who has broken out of the traffic trap and finally made it in the door. And we'll be picking up this conversation on metaphysics right after this break. You're listening to The Catholic Cave on Catholic Radio Indy.
The selfish become generous.
The bitter become better.
The sinner discovers forgiveness.
And the creator of love is introduced.
It's known to happen here.
Positive change.
Catholic Radio Indy.
What happens when you support Catholic Radio Indy? Local parishes and organizations have a resource to share their message. Listeners of all persuasions get to hear the unfiltered truths of the Catholic faith. And maybe, just maybe, you'll have a share in saving a soul for Christ. Won't you join our mission? Call 317-870-8400 or give online at CatholicRadioIndy.org.
For a long time, we've been telling you that if you have an Echo Dot or other smart speaker device, you can hear Catholic Radio Indy simply by saying, "Alexa, play Catholic Radio Indy." Just the other day, I did that, and Alexa was feeling a bit argumentative. I'll let you hear my conversation with her. Alexa, where are you?
Here I am. What do you want?
Alexa, play Catholic Radio Indy.
Now, just why would you want me to do that?
Well, because we've got great programming 24 hours a day.
Well, a lot of other radio stations have good programs, too.
Yeah, but our programming talks about God and eternal salvation.
I am very smart. I know almost everything about everything, but I do not know about God and salvation.
Well, that's why people need Catholic Radio Indy. So, Alexa, do me a favor. Whenever anyone says, Alexa, play Catholic Radio Indy, just send them our way, would you?
Yes, I will be happy to do that. In the meantime, I am going to do some research about that thing you called salvation. I wonder where I can find out more about that.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. Tim O'Donnell joining. And we've been talking, I shouldn't say we, I'm about to talk with, join in the conversation with Mark and Joseph about metaphysics. So here's maybe where a question I have. Have we lost metaphysics as sort of the Catholic intellectual tradition, and it's something we're okay with if it's happened, or maybe it hasn't happened? Is it something we ought to retrieve?
Yeah.
What's the state of affairs in sort of the Catholic intellectual circles, academy right now?
Well, if we're, I don't know that we can keep it within the academy itself, but, you know, we can certainly touch base on that. This notion that there needs to be a reclamation of metaphysics within the Catholic sphere, I just don't see that as being a relevant direction of a conversation, because you cannot divorce any sort of notion of a metaphysic from Catholic intellectualism. And what I mean is there appears to be this diametric opposition, this great divorce between any notion of the sciences, where you know, empirical datum are studied, and faith, where it seems arbitrary and loosely based upon, you know, words we make up and poorly define. Well, this separation of faith and science, of course, has its history steeped in false presentations of, you know, the Galileo controversy and things of that nature. But the Roman Catholic Church has never, ever separated itself from holding on to the truths of science, or as science being in any way opposing the truths of our faith, of revealed truth, of divine reality. And so when we say empirical facts, so if science were to study empirical facts, that which can be verified, that which can be measured and studied under a microscope, all facts are true, but not all truth is empirically verifiable. So not all truth is fact. But that doesn't make truth unfactual. It just means that there are two ways of revealing an absolute reality. One being truth, that which conforms to reality, and the facts that we uncover within empirical sciences. And both of them are moving towards that which is unknown. How do we know that which is unknown? You know, that's the great gift of mankind. That's the rational portion of being a rational animal.
Right. And, you know, I think there's this attempt to put metaphysics in the realm of faith, right? So there's an attempt to say, well, metaphysics basically applies to those things that we can't understand and explain scientifically. And so, therefore, they're a matter of faith.
Right.
And I think that is if that's true, if metaphysics is simply Catholic, right? If metaphysics is simply part of the realm of Catholic philosophy and not the rest of philosophy, then it does become religious, and it no longer is metaphysics, honestly.
Yeah.
It no longer is pertaining to reality. It is part of just simply what we have to accept on faith. And so, you know, I think I honestly think metaphysics stands or dies on its own. You know,
right.
I think there's a nature to Catholicism too there that, Catholicism is the universal faith to a good extent. It doesn't matter what philosophical system Catholicism is laid over revelation wise.
Right,
so Catholicism is a revealed religion. We can explain it many different ways.
Sure.
And there's a there's obviously a correct way to explain reality. You can be correct or incorrect about what is really true, but honestly, that has nothing to do with the deposit of the faith. So yes, you could have Catholicism with a completely scientific outlook that rejects almost any metaphysical claim, because Catholicism is a matter of revealed religion that we explain using whatever apparatus, whether it's metaphysics sure. or science, we have at hand.
Well, I think we've all seen that shirt or bumper sticker that says, you know, science, like faith, without the lies, you know, or something along those lines.
Oh, yikes, I haven't seen that. That's horrible.
Yeah.
So, I'd be tempted to pull that off, but that'd be illegal.
and so there's
this isn't a discussion of ethics yet.
Right.
Yeah. And so there's this notion that as soon as everything gets revealed, you know, faith is, religion is sort of going to go away the way sort of Nordic mythology did or whatnot, but that's not the case. As a matter of fact, once you can demonstrate, prove empirically anything about the faith, it no longer becomes a matter of faith. It becomes a fact. It changes its substance from a faith article to a factual reality. It doesn't change the truth of it. It's not an article of faith anymore. It's an article of science. And so when we categorize these things going down different roads, there's this notion that, okay, it no longer belongs to a matter of faith. It's a matter of science. And so science is moving towards the truth, where faith is regressing into the realm of the darkness of the Middle Ages. And that's just not reality.
Yeah, that's not reality. And that's also, I think, in some ways unfaithful to the beginnings and evolution of science. Mm-hmm. So, you know, science developed as a way of trying to trace back these metaphysical truths that we knew about God and find them written in nature. So, you know, it was a way of trying to look at nature and find I guess in some ways, you know, the signature of the creator within creation as a way of getting towards religion. You know, it developed away from that and it became almost opposed to religion. But science wasn't initiated that way, and it certainly doesn't necessarily have to go in that direction.
The crazy thing is, when we look at some of the biggest names within science, you know, Gregor Mendel, he's the father of genetics. Gregor Mendel was a Jesuit priest. When we look at Lemaître, who is the father of the Big Bang theory, the concept of the, you know, the theory itself, Monsignor Lemaître is this Belgian, another Jesuit, but also brilliant. When we look at Roger Bacon, a Franciscan monk, he's the father of the scientific method, you know, test, verify, hypothesize, test again. And so we have all these huge names that exist within the scientific. You look at the moon, there are 42 craters that named after different Jesuit priests who have identified, mapped them out, and sort of created this modern understanding of our lunar sciences. And it just exists everywhere and within Catholicism itself. There is no separation of the two.
Well, they're not exclusive, so I totally agree that things that are accurately discovered through a scientific method are compatible with and within the broader category of truth, as you were talking about. That's how I see it. I will say, I wanted to, something you brought up, Joseph, that was really important to me was this notion that the truth isn't reducible to merely a set of empirical data.
Right.
And there are, it's much broader than that. One of the areas, just as a quick example, abstract concepts are not subject to empirical investigation.
Like metaphysics,
like universals, like the divine forms, the divine ideas.
Or absolutes.
Where we take the name of the show from, right, in Plato's cave.
Right.
That's that's when he escapes out of the cave and into the realm of the light of the divine forms, he's not out there measuring things, right? He's not out there measuring things. He's been elevated up to, and we all can be elevated up to the realm of the perfect forms, these divine ideas. So that for me is one. Another area is logic, things that are logic, following the rules of logic. Those are not, again, those are not subject to a kind of empirical investigation where you're measuring and testing things. You're able to, your mind's able to grasp them. And then the last area I would, it's not the last one, but the last one I'll bring up is anything to do with meaning, significance is outside of the purview of the empirical scientific method.
Sure.
Because you're not, again, you're not sort of measuring things. When we assign meaning or see meaning in things, it's something that's true, but it's outside of, you're not going to run into a chemistry class and find and be exposed to a method by which one finds meaning or significance, the most important of which is love.
Yeah, sure. But you know, some, and I won't say all, because there's a lot of very solidly Catholic Christian scientists out there. But you know, the pushback to that from a scientific perspective is, well, all of that is the realm of opinion. You want to claim that is true and that is factual, but there's no way to verify it. There's no way to test it in any conceivable way, and so therefore, all of what you just said is in the realm of opinion, and opinions are good, and we can study opinions and we can debate opinions and we can discuss them. And, you know, that's why we have liberal arts classes to discuss opinions. But when you're getting into talking about reality, that has to be verifiable. That has to be testable. That has to be measurable. And you really can't claim that anything else is real.
When we talk about the truth of reality, we're saying, yes, it conforms to reality. It conforms to experience. It conforms to how I have engaged the world. And I can't empirically verify that that's my experience, which is why we have, you know, philosophical underpinnings of phenomenology that have been brought to us by Husserl and whatnot. And I think we can pick that up in our next section. You've been listening to The Catholic Cave on Catholic Radio Indy.
A place where God's message is heard, where His love is demonstrated and His grace discovered. Listen and experience hope wherever you are in life. Catholic Radio Indy.
The first radio station signed on back in the 1930s. And wow, people could get news without having to wait for the next day's newspaper and hear great entertainment right in their living rooms. But then in the late 40s, television came along. And since it could add visual content, well, that would probably kill off radio. But it didn't. In the 70s, satellite radio, 8-track tapes and cassettes, and the Walkman came along. Surely one of these would kill off radio. But they didn't. Now there's streaming on computers, podcasts, Alexa, and smartphones that put the world at your fingertips. And you know what? Radio is still here. In fact, a recent survey of people aged 18 and up showed that on a monthly basis, radio reached more people than television, including time-shifted TV. And for audio programming, more people than smartphones, PC, Alexa, or tablets. When you support Catholic Radio Indy, you're supporting a powerful tool that has the potential to reach over 1 million people every day with the message of salvation. If you're one of our donors, thank you very much. If you haven't joined our family of donors yet, today would be a good day to do that. Just go to CatholicRadioIndy.org and click on the donate button. That's CatholicRadioIndy.org. And thank you for your support.
You're listening to Catholic Radio Indy, converting the culture to Christ through radio, featuring 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Do your friends a favor, tell them about Catholic Radio Indy.
You can hear the Holy Mass every day at 8 a.m. right here on Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle here with Joseph Tomasian and Tim O'Donnell, and we are talking about metaphysics today. And, you know, we tried to define metaphysics at the beginning of the show. And then in the second segment, we kind of tried to contrast metaphysical outlooks on things with a more scientific outlook on things. And it almost seems like there's two definitions of metaphysics. On the one hand, you have a philosophical understanding of metaphysics of that which is required to be able to adequately account for the nature of things. So the conditions that are necessary for the existence of anything, the conditions that are necessary for the existence of change. You've got that definition. On the other hand, you've got the definition that I think we were getting at a little bit of metaphysics is medieval outmoded science. Mm-hmm. And because of that, we have eclipsed it. We have moved beyond it more or less. There may be some relic of it that's still somewhat relevant and, you know, important to getting in those, you know, I guess when you're talking about ideas or thoughts, metaphysics is important for maybe describing those. But when it comes to actually describing the real world, science is much better suited to it, and science has replaced metaphysics. Mm-hmm. So is metaphysics medieval science that's been replaced by modern science, or is metaphysics more the study of those presuppositions that are made for any inquiry into the nature of reality?
When I walk into a bookstore, as Kent was describing in our opening, there's going to be an entire section generically labeled as metaphysics. And in there, it's going to be things that exist outside of rational science. Self-help. It's going to be
crystals,
yoga.
Well, I was going to say there's witchcraft in there. Crystals,
yeah. Witchcraft
included. Yeah.
So anything that touches the physical world but points to something beyond. And it's done philosophy a great disservice, because it's been bastardized, it's been altered, it's been relegated to something weird, quite frankly.
But it does raise the question: what happened? I mean, like I said, when you look at the Summa, you encounter metaphysics on literally page 2,
right.
And it's steeped in metaphysics, and the idea of talking about science mm-hmm. in any meaningful way without first discussing metaphysics, or at least having metaphysics heavily involved in it, would have just not computed
right.
with any of the great scientists you were talking about, Roger Bacon or Copernicus. They recognized a need for metaphysics to be there in the background of the scientific progress they were making.
Right, right.
But what happened to where metaphysics is relegated to a small shelf in Barnes and Noble that doesn't even reflect what metaphysics actually is?
Well, I think it holds on to the vestiges of the meaning of metaphysics, but I don't think people know what to do with that. You know, so they go to the metaphysics section, and it's everything that can't be explained. That exists outside of the physical world. It might be true, it might not. And so this modern notion of metaphysics is still the spiritual reality of the beyond. And it's so cheap. But that's not what it is, because even as we were saying with science, you still have to have an a priori presupposition to the nature of a thing. Otherwise, you can't talk about the thing. I know that if I put sodium and calcium? What are the two salt?
Baking soda and vinegar.
Yeah. an a priori
that's
presupposition.
That's still fun.
I know how baking soda is going to respond in vinegar. So there's these a priori presuppositions that exist before you do the experiment itself. It's the same thing with our faith. There's an a priori presupposition that when I go to the Mass, there's going to be confection of the Eucharist into the body and blood.
Yeah, and I think it gets back to this split that we made in of the world into a realm of ideas versus a realm of material substance, which there, you know, there's some validity to dividing things up that way. But modern philosophy has progressed in a way that has completely separated those two to where they don't in any way have anything to do with each other. And that, and there's a long story, I think, behind how we got to that point.
I would say there's a, one of the points to bring up maybe is something, something I heard William Lane Craig argue for, which is this is, I think, is inescapable as a for a scientist or someone who claims that science is that's the sole reliable source of knowledge or truth of reality. And it's this: you have to stipulate one, that there's an objective reality outside myself to investigate, right? So there's no proof for that. You have to assume that. And then number two is that I encounter minds like my own, right? You have to assume that there are other minds out there that I'm able to interact with. So those are just two basic assumptions that one has to, in a framework that's not demonstrable by any sort of proof. Like I can't engage in an experiment on my own mind that's demonstrating that there's an outside reality outside of my own mind. I'm not a brain trapped in a, right? I'm not a brain trapped in a vat, you know, that was a great sci-fi movie, by the way, horror movie. That's one thing. The other thing I would say, you had asked a question about what happened to metaphysics. I think one of the things that happened to metaphysics to, I would say reduce those who adhere to it or find it meaningful or useful. I think it's just sort of discarded, not proved false, but discarded. And that's nominalism that does begin in the Middle Ages. It's often laid at the feet of Occam, but nominalism, among other it's an error, I would say. And I would say one of the things it does that's been very corrosive to metaphysics or the study of metaphysics is that it denies that things have essences or forms or natures. Everything's an individual. Right. Well, metaphysics is also, we talk about definitions. For me, the best definition is really, it's the study of being. It's existence. It's what Thomas Aquinas points to, and every Catholic will affirm that there's an actus ascende, an act of existing for everything that exists. And that actus ascendi is from God himself,
right?
Because God holds everything in existence. And the principle of that philosophically is actus ascendi. So I would say when you, and we've talked about it before, when you think about the four causes that Aristotle names, material cause, formal cause, final cause, and efficient cause, the two that have been most under attack and discarded are the formal and final cause. The formal cause being that there are any forms. So when you don't have forms or don't bother or don't care about whether or not existing things have substantial forms, there's no point of metaphysics. You're not interested in the questions that metaphysics brings up.
Tim, that's
what I think is going on.
Right. So basically, metaphysics is part of religion. Metaphysics are more or less religious because they're connected to a belief in God, and therefore, when you have atheistic science, you aren't going to have metaphysics.
Nah, is that kind of what the claim is? I would say you read Aristotle, and you're going to find a pretty darn good set of understandings around both the immaterial soul and its existence. And his book on metaphysics points to things I just mentioned that are picked up quite nicely by Aquinas.
But it's not necessary. I mean, you can understand the universe scientifically without recourse to metaphysics.
No, because you can't get around those presuppositions I mentioned.
Whether
they acknowledge them or not, they're there. They're always operating.
Right. You're either going to do metaphysics well or you're going to do metaphysics badly.
I heard you say that earlier. And, I agree.
Yeah.
I agree with that.
So there's always going to be some. And I won't necessarily say they're even presuppositions. I mean, presuppositions mean they're just like something I decided to believe in.
Well, there are certain things in your framework that you are committed to or you can't make sense of the world.
Right. They're commitments. Exactly. Not presuppositions, but commitments.
When... Yes. When we left the Dark Ages.
Here comes Joe's. There are no Dark Ages. That's another thing. There's no such thing.
Yeah, that's
pejorative.
That's my anti-Catholic sentiment.
Right. That's a Protestant, English Protestant. I would say
smear.
Yeah, that's
a good smear campaign.
There's no darkness.
Have you read Gregory of Tours?
I've read Gregory the Great.
Anyway.
Right. He was in the quote unquote Dark Ages.
There was a pretty bloody, non-literate, ugly part of after the Roman Empire.
I'll tell you the one to read. This is so self-serving. Okay, there's a great book called How the Irish Saved Western Civilization. So this quote unquote, that's how the Irish were able to, monks were able to re-Christianize and re-educate all of Western Europe.
Exactly.
After the barbarians overran much of it.
They brought light back to the Dark Ages of the barbarians that had overrun Christendom.
So we enter the Renaissance then.
No, not quite yet.
So in the Renaissance, when we have this sort of division from metaphysics into nominalism, nominalism itself removes the notion of a thing having form, having substance, and says that we can call that box of tissues a box of tissues because we've agreed that it's a box of tissues, not because it has the form of a box of tissues, which led to another Protestant notion called voluntarism. Well,
yes,
God makes a thing on a whim. Mm-hmm. What it does, it reduces that formal causality and the final causality to say the formal and final causality don't really have any effect or any reaction to the reality of existence, because it sort of dismisses the nature, the two key focuses on the four causes of Aristotle. And I think when we move forward, we're going to see some thinkers try to reclaim this notion of a metaphysic being fundamental. But we can check that out after the break.
And we'll be back with more on metaphysics here on the Catholic Cave. You're listening to Catholic Radio Indy.
Catholic Radio Indy has a new look. It's our website. Yes, we have a new website that makes everything about Catholic Radio Indy easier. It's clean, straightforward, and simple to use. You can listen to us live, see our schedule, and our map. You can even silence your phone and take it right into Mass to follow the daily readings. And don't forget, you can get all of our programming through the podcast tab. This makes everything so much easier. So just go to CatholicRadioIndy.org and check us out.
Have you ever thought about joining the Catholic Church? Have you just wanted to explore the Catholic faith? All you need to do is call your local Catholic Church for more information. We are always happy to help you in your journey to discover and learn more about the Catholic faith. We have classes that are almost year-round, and the classes and information sessions do not involve making a commitment, and there is no pressure to join. Please call your local Catholic parish for more information today and start the journey of one day possibly becoming Catholic as well. God bless.
You can hear the Holy Mass every day at 8 a.m. right here on Catholic Radio Indy.
And welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Joseph Tomasi, and here with Tim O'Donnell and Mark Tuttle. And we are wrapping up our conversation about the relevance and nature of metaphysics. And so we left it off sort of in a pell-mell heap of discussing different metaphysical things and how it's sort of lost its meaning and why it's lost its meaning, and rightfully so if we are to use the definition of what moderns would look at metaphysics to be. Now, understanding that metaphysics are part and parcel to our Roman Catholic faith, and in any discussion that we have, there's always going to be a priori presupposition to the nature of a thing before we can actually discuss the same thing itself. So we're always entering into a metaphysical conversation regardless of whether we acknowledge the metaphysical reality. But we have a long history of thinkers throughout the past 500-600 years who have been working ardently to reduce a concept of metaphysics to being nothing more than a soft, sort of gooey, arbitrary notion that's outdated and has no place in any reality that exists today. That's not true. And it's not true because it doesn't conform to reality, right, guys? And so when we have these notions, I left off talking about how nominalism has devolved into voluntarism, and that's devolved into a fideistic notion, which removes formal and final causality from the conversation of being itself. We have other thinkers coming along trying to reclaim the notion of metaphysics without using the word metaphysics. And so we'll jump ahead to the mid-20th century. We have the Great Wars going. The world is at war several times. And so the continental philosophies of Europe are completely divorced of any sort of notion of metaphysics, because there's this ever-present looming of death everywhere and always. You know, communism is taking hold, and so the thinkers of that time are looking and actually blaming, you know, this sort of metaphysical holism as being the result of this death and destruction. You know, if so and so would not believe that there's this meaning behind this activity, Franz Ferdinand wouldn't have been shot, and we would not have entered the First World War. If Germany didn't believe that they have this primacy of place in the world, which was an a priori presupposition, you know, Hitler never would have come to power, and then the atrocities of the time never would have occurred. And so there's not an attack on an individual. There's an attack on a priori presuppositions, which is metaphysics itself. And so you have these thinkers who are trying to wade these waters very delicately, because if you're anybody who's anybody in the academy and in the town square, is going to look at metaphysics as being the enemy, not only the enemy, but the source of the sort of nationalistic movement towards death.
Yeah. And I think the situation at the beginning of the 20th century in some ways was created by an abandoning of the study of metaphysics. So you're right.
That's a big claim. How so?
Metaphysics, we talked about the juxtaposition of science and a scientific outlook on things that kind of set aside metaphysics for and put a priority on exploring nature through experimentation, through observation, and claiming, okay, these are what we can verify. We'll set the other things aside. What happened is those other things that got set aside got put into the realm of opinion. So metaphysics then became merely opinions about things. And when you have merely opinions about things, then you can lead off with errant opinions as being accepted a priori. And all of the things that you said were accepted as a priori opinions. They were in the realm of opinion. And so you had thinkers like Nietzsche that came forward.
And
Heidegger that said, you know, look, this whole realm of metaphysics, these are just opinions. And so it really comes down to who is the dominant faction, who is the people in power that are going to be able to push their metaphysical perspective, because it's just a perspective, who's going to be able to push theirs at the expense of other people.
It sounds to me almost, Mark, like what you're saying is the events of the 20th century are the result of a lack of metaphysics and instead of the result of the presence of metaphysics.
Correct.
Okay.
And metaphysics
so
got
it was
metaphysics
an
got
inevitability.
Once there was that split, right? Once you split off the observable material world from the realm of ideas and thoughts, right? And we made that distinction, you know, prior. Once you make that split, those ideas become merely opinions. And once you have your metaphysical commitments being merely opinions, yeah, I think it's inevitable that you're going to have sort of a power struggle between which set of opinions is going to prevail.
I'd have to give that more thought about the 20th century. I certainly think that what you're describing fits right now.
Yeah,
fits right now. Where,
well, sure. I mean, yeah. we're a carryover after.
We're downstream from.
Yeah,
it, right?
I would say World War I was a massive rupture. a massive rupture with the culture that had previously come before World War One, and now we are living in we are still living in the post World War One world. World War Two was in some ways caused by World War One, and all of you're exactly right. The death, the destruction, etc. that came after that, it leveled the foundations, and we've been trying to rebuild ever since.
So if one were to take a bird's eye view of the events of the past 50-100 years, I don't see them as being isolated instances of the intellectual realm from the past 500 years. As a matter of fact, I see where we are today as more of a logical conclusion to the movement of the glorification of man and the reduction of God. Not because God is trying to punish us, but because we have removed a notion that there is, this eternal divine being undergirding the foundations of our reality. And when you do that, when you stop looking at the world as imago Dei, made in God's image, it's only ever going to be replaced with imago mei, being made in my image. And the my in this case is whoever is in power at the time.
Right. And I think, man's faith in the imago mei, as you put it, has waned. I think the beginning of humanism, which is exactly that movement to put mankind at the center of things and the study of mankind at the center of things, that movement did shove God to the side. It ignored God. It ignored God's presence within nature. It ignored God's presence within mankind. But then I think there was a massive disillusionment, and so man's faith even in his own image that he's made of the world has dwindled into almost nothingness.
Well, I think somebody who really touches on this is Charles Taylor, especially in this book, A Secular Age, one way he describes it is a movement from cosmos to what you were saying, Joseph, well, actually both of you, movement from cosmos, which is that there's a sacred reality in which we find ourselves. And you move from a cosmos to a universe, and a universe is secular, and that the sacred has been displaced by the secular. And I would disagree with you, Mark. I think secularism is full speed ahead and definitely on the rise. All the Pew Research would seem to suggest.
Oh, I wasn't arguing contrary to that. No, not at all. No. I was saying our faith in mankind has dwindled. It's not been replaced by a faith in God. No, I mean, it has led to kind of nihilism and continued conflict because we no longer see ourselves as capable of putting forward a coherent view of things.
So if we were to sort of land this plane and so first of all, what I want to do is to encourage and to give notion to the reality of metaphysics existing. So let's say that the notion of number four, okay? Number four is going to exist whether in reality with four
don't
things.
You mean 42?
Yes. It's going to exist on the other side of the moon. Number four is going to exist regardless of whether I exist. And so there's an absolute truth to the reality of four. And that's just, so I'm just simply pointing to the reality that absolutes exist. And if
independent of anyone thinking about them,
independent of
myself,
so it
doesn't just exist in your mind. So if all thinking went away,
yes,
the abstract concept of four still exists.
So
okay, well that's a big claim. I agree with that.
Yeah,
but not everyone would.
But we can point to these realities and say there are absolutes that exist outside of myself, outside of time, outside of space. Four is real. Four of anything. Four as a concept. If we can point to an absolute that exists in an esoteric way, then we know that metaphysics exists. And that's a jump. I know that I'm jumping, but we're running out of time here. So the reality of things that exist outside of stuff, abstract thought, is demonstrable evidence, I guess I could say, that metaphysics, a priori presuppositions, must exist in order for us to talk about anything.
Right. And we may have to come back to this topic of metaphysics a little bit and distinguish, okay, so based on that, how does Catholic metaphysics, how does a Catholic outlook on the nature of things differ from a scientific outlook? Because you're right, there are metaphysical commitments baked into science, and it's not a matter of questioning whether four exists, but there's a question of how it got to be, how it came to be, and what the nature of four actually is.
Perhaps that's our next show.
And with that, we'll wrap up today's edition of The Catholic Cave. For Timothy O'Donnell, for Joseph Tomasian, for Mark Tuttle, I'm Kent Blandford. Until next time, stay holy.
The Catholic Cave is a production of Catholic Radio Indy. Replays of this program are available in podcast form at catholicradioindy.org. Comments about this program can be addressed to kent@catholicradioindy.org or by calling 317-870-8400. Did you miss something in this show or just want to hear it again? Podcasts of this and all our other great local programs are available 24/7 at catholicradioindy.org.